Oh, welcome back here to wrap up the first hour of the weekend edition. I am wrapping up this hour with Jeff Christian. He is the managing partner over at the CPM Group. We're going to be focusing a lot on resource and precious metals sectors, but we're also going to be talking kind of in a broad sense of what some of these more overwhelming issues are for this sector. First, though, Jeff, it feels like every day we wake up, we look at the markets, and throughout the day we're looking at the metals markets, and what we continue to see is range-bound moves. This week was a great example of gold moving slightly higher, just above 1,300, and then at the end of the week, or middle to tail end of the week, dropping below 1,300, and quite frankly, you pull up that monthly chart, and you see this boring range-bound sideways trade that the metals have been in for a long time now. Have you ever seen any other metals markets that are similar to this time frame where it's just been a boring sideways move?
Yeah, we have seen it. Late 1983, 84, we saw this kind of becalmed gold and silver prices. We saw it again in 1995, 1996, into early 1997, where the markets become sort of range bound. And I guess if you look at those two periods and maybe the current period, one of the things that you see is they're mid-cycle economically. Yeah, so we've had a recession in each case. We come out of the recession. Precious metals and other commodities were recovering. They got to a certain point. We're halfway through the economic expansion, and you just sort of get into the Sargasso Sea of quietness that, you know, takes a while to break out of. And so we have seen it before, and we'll probably see it again.
What caused the markets to break after those other times that you just mentioned of those sideways moves?
Yeah, you know, I have to admit that I'm not quite too clear on what was going on in 84, 85, 86. But I do know that, you know, you had sort of a shift in attitudes toward the dollar, which was rising at the time. And it continued to rise for a couple of years, but people were starting to say, wait a second, the dollar's too high, it's too strong. And you started to see some people cycling out of commodities. So you had a dip down, and then you had the prices come back up more sharply in 85, 86, 87. And you know, in 95, 96, 97, the gold price was pretty much range bound, as was silver. And then you had the BREX scandal, and that pushed gold prices down for several years before they started rising again. You know, ultimately they've risen as you got into the late stages of an economic cycle and investors started cycling out of stocks and bonds into gold and silver.
So what about the U.S. dollar, though? You bring up a good point there, where right now we are still hearing people say the U.S. dollar is too high, but it's not in the 100 level on the dollar index. What's your outlook?
Our outlook is that the dollar probably will be sideways, kind of volatile, with an upward bend. And the upward inclination reflects the fact that, you know, and this has changed, too. Let me back up. We think that the dollar is sort of where it was in 1984 in terms of cyclicality, in that, yeah, there are a lot of people starting to say, hey, this thing looks like it's top heavy and it could come down. But the reality is that it could go up for another, you know, 12, 15 months before you start to see it go down, which is what happened back then. One of the things that we're watching with the dollar is, up until this year, the Fed was liquidating its bond portfolio. And when it does that sucks dollars out of circulation. Now, because there's so much debt in the world, not just the U.S. government debt, but private debt and other governments' debt that's denominated in dollars, the debtors need dollars to service that debt. And what we saw was, you know, maybe a 10% decline in the Fed's balance sheet over the last year, year and a half. And that was sucking out, you know, several hundred billion dollars worth of dollars from circulation. And that was one of the factors that's been pushing the gold, the dollar exchange rate up, was that debtors needed a flow of dollars in order to service their debt. Now, the Fed has said that it's pulling back from reducing its balance sheet and raising interest rates, at least for a while. So that could put cap on the dollar. But insofar as the dollar, you know, represents 62% of monetary reserves held by governments and probably 75% of private sector wealth, there's a need for the dollar that will keep the dollar higher and possibly move it somewhat higher yet before we see it come down sometime down the road.
All right, Jeff, let's also talk about something you and I were chatting about off mic, and that is the problem with the metals trading side of things. Some of these issues transcend just simply the fundamentals of these actual metals. Can you share some of the details, what you've been talking to some of these other groups that are looking at these metal sectors?
Yeah, you know, I think the regulatory environment is really causing problems, not just for the metals industry, but across industries. And we're seeing that in various sectors. So, for example, as I was saying off mic, you know, we were talking to the jewelry manufacturers, and they have a real problem because the U.S. government has this rule that says if you can't certify that the gold in your jewelry was mined in America, you know, you bought it from a refinery, where did that refinery get the metal? You have no idea, oh, you know, that gold might have been in Cleopatra's, you know, rings 5,000 years ago or 3,000 years ago. You know, you don't know where that gold's coming from. You can't say that jewelry was made in America. So we were talking to the jewelry industry and they were having these problems with gold and silver. And, you know, our point is it's not just jewelry, it's not just gold and silver. This made in America rule that the United States is living under, which is much more severe than the rest of the world is living under. The rest of the world has reached an agreement that allows people to continue to do business. But the U.S. has taken a much more stern and comprehensive and restrictive regulation. And so it's kind of grinding the jewelry industry to a halt. And what our comment was, you have to step outside of the jewelry industry and get like the National Association of Manufacturers to complain about it, which has happened in the past. But you're seeing, you know, increased regulations on the financial markets, both on the buy side and on the sell side. And you're finding institutional investors like afraid to talk to people. We're finding, you know, we have one client that sells our research to institutional investors, and they've become so overly protective to make sure that they don't wind up providing inside information that they are having trouble getting consultants like CPM Group allowing us to talk to their clients because, you know, CPM Group talks to people around the world throughout the precious metals industries, from producers to refiners to users to investors. And people have to rely on our integrity and our ethics to not tell them confidential information. And we have a 40-year record of doing that and maintaining confidences long beyond when we were legally responsible to continue doing so. But there's this legalistic tendency to say, no, we just can't trust anybody's ethics anymore. So therefore, this consultant who knows stuff about these markets must not speak to our institutional investor clients. And you're finding this, you know, across the board. We have one of the largest precious metals hedge funds. It took them 6 months to open an account just to buy gold on a standard, you know, T+2 basis where, you know, I'll agree to buy gold from you. On day one, I wire the money to your bank account on day two. You get the money and you release the gold on day three, the third, you know, the second day after we've made the trade. And it took them 6 months to open that account with a major refinery, you know, being a major hedge fund. So what you're finding is that transactions are becoming more expensive and more difficult to undertake. And people are getting frustrated and just walking away.
It really seems like this is going in the wrong direction. If we want a more sustainable, even bull market, or just to get more investors into the metals, there need to be some changes in the opposite direction of the way that they have been going. Do you see this happening? Is there any light at the end of the tunnel here?
You know, there's got to be a way to resolve it. I don't know how we get from where we are to where we were. You know, I always talk about, you know, Dodd-Frank's was like 5,000 or 6,000 pages. Sarbanes-Oxley was 5,000 pages. The Commodities Trade Act of 1974 was an enormous legalistic document that was confusing to everybody and is still confusing to everybody. When we created the SEC in 1933, I think it was about a 5-page piece of legislation, which basically said, don't trade on inside information, don't screw your clients, don't screw anybody else. And by the way, we're hiring Joe Kennedy Sr. to run the SEC, and he knows every trick in the book, so he's going to be watching. You know, and that's ultimately where you've got to get to. You've got to get to practical, effective regulations. I mean, the regulations that we have now, like my client who can't trust us to talk to clients and not divulge inside information, all of his regulations don't do anything to protect him and his clients from somebody who wants to give them inside information, because that person will just lie. If he's not ethical, he's going to lie, you know. So none of this regulation actually is effective, but it's cumbersome. So it's squashing business, it's reducing the ability to do business, and it's really not protecting the public at all from the kinds of misfeasance and malfeasance that led to 2007-2009.
So how does this leave, or where does this leave the, like, retail investor, the little guy in this? It sounds like there's stuff going very much against them, so kind of hard for the little guy to win out, isn't it?
The little guy is up on the hill watching the fires burn in the valley. I mean, you know, and that's probably where he's always been, and that's where he is today. You know, he's just sort of watching this and saying, yeah, okay, not even the really big institutional investors can get quality information and make informed decisions. What am I supposed to do?
Yeah, it's disappointing, isn't it? But now, Jeff, one thing that the CPM Group did put out recently was how precious metals, this could be a year to accumulate. Can you share some more information on why you released that?
Well, that goes back to what we were talking about at the very beginning. You know, we're in this doldrums now. We're I used the term, I think, Sargasso Sea, but you know, we're in the horse latitudes where the price of gold's trading between 1280 and 1330, 1350. And our view is that, yes, it could come down. It could go down to 1250. There are people who are looking at a head and shoulders pattern and saying it could go down to 1215 in the second and third quarters of this year. But we take a longer term view at gold and at silver and at platinum right now. And we're saying, look, from a long term perspective, you know, 1280, 1300, even 1250, you know, all of these prices seem to be incredibly low from where we think the price is going to be 5-10 years from now. And silver is, you know, trading around $15 for, you know, it broke below $15 yesterday and it's below $15 as we speak. You know, that's probably a pretty good price to accumulate if you're a long-term investor. You might see lower prices 6 months from now, but you might see higher prices 12 months, 2 years, 5 years from now. So, you know, from our perspective, if you're a long-term investor, a buy and hold type of guy, these may be very attractive levels at which to buy and hold the metal, or as you say, accumulate the metal and add to your portfolio. Not only because gold, silver, platinum prices look cheap, but also because the dollar and the stock market and the bond market all look pricey. And a lot of those economic and political and financial market factors that cause instability, that cause gold and silver prices to rise, they're there. They're getting bigger. They're not likely to whack the market, we think, in the next 6 to 12 months, but at some point they will. And when that happens, gold and silver prices will rise sharply, and you won't want to be buying them as the price rises. You want to buy them now while the price is dead and investors are saying, I don't want this stuff.
All right, Jeff, we're going to wrap it up there. It's always great having you on the show, and I hope everybody enjoyed this first hour. If you want to get in touch, please email me, fleck@kereport.com. I love hearing from all of you, our listeners. Please share with me any trading ideas that you have, any companies you want me to look into, and always listen to those company interviews that I have every week, which are also outlined at the bottom of the posting for the weekend show. Jeff, great chatting with you. Thank you for all you do for the CPM Group and thank you for sharing your insights in the resource sector. Have a great rest of your weekend there, Jeff.
For our upcoming appearance schedule, visit kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back in just a moment.